Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist here with John Harry Turan, and we are going to talk about the cloak of invisibility and the power of silence. John is going to teach you how to stay sane in an insane world and how not to be noticed when you need silence and privacy. You know, the ancients knew about this, and now you are going to know about it as well. John, it's an honor to be interviewing you right now.
Thank you, Steve. It is my pleasure to be here.
And it's always a pleasure for me to learn and to be a facilitator, sort of pulling knowledge out of your brain and sharing it with the world. So I consider that my role in all this, sort of asking the questions that are going to probe your mind and pull knowledge out of your brain, out of your mind, and share that knowledge with the world, because through your experiences and the studies you've done, and just being who you are and as advanced as you are, you have got a wealth of knowledge that the average person just finds mind-boggling. And I find it just startling myself. Just so much knowledge. So if it's all right with you, we're going to jump right in and talk about these topics.
Well, great. Thank you for such kind words. I could listen all day.
Maybe we'll produce a recording just me talking about how great you are.
For that, I have a lot of time.
Actually, I think that could take up a good hour or so, because seriously, folks, John is just outstanding. He's become a good friend, just a wonderful person. But John, let's start with the cloak of invisibility. What do you mean when you say cloak of invisibility?
Okay, sometimes we talk using symbols. Actually, words are symbols. And so when I say cloak of invisibility, it's a method of, let's say, permitting yourself to go unnoticed. Not that all of a sudden you stand there and then you disappear. I think shoplifters would love to be able to do that, or enemies of the state, or whoever, if they had such power. And yet the rishis, Rishis, the ancient rishis, knew about this. Yogis know about it. Advanced life forms know about this. And it's just a simple matter of being so still in the middle of noise that people don't notice you when you want them not to notice you. How many times do we sit down in a certain public place with friends or others, and people are asking you this question and that? How many times do you have work to do? And let's say you're sitting in a room or at a meeting, and you're trying to get your thoughts together, and people are bothering you with this, that, or the other, and you wish they'd leave you alone for just a few minutes. There are techniques, and they're extremely simple techniques that would you aren't offending anyone, but it's to them it's like you aren't even there. Let me give you another example. I think there are times when I get sleepy and times when I don't even get sleepy, and I'm reading a book, and I noticed I've finished the whole page and I have no idea what was on that page. And I have to start reading it over again. And halfway through, I go into another world, like I'm thinking about something else, and I finish the entire page and I have no idea again what was in it. Hasn't that happened to you and others, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure most people can relate to that.
Yes, and that's because we're not paying attention to our thoughts, or we are being distracted by lots of outside noise or events. There are just two things here: things or events. And being distracted by those, we tend to lose our focus. And when we lose our focus, we're scattered all over the place. Now, let's take a simple example. And this, I think there are many who are listening who could relate to this. You are in, I like this one. Not many will relate to this. I like this one, Steve, because it had to do with classes at the university, or one of the universities. Now, I found a lot of classes, some of them very complex, some of them very boring, a number of them very exciting. Now, what did I do through some of these classes? Here's an example. There are times when the professor at the beginning of the semester would say, "Look, students, your grades are comprised of three parts. 1, your class participation, 2, your final exam, and 3, maybe your attendance if you're in undergraduate school. And so you sit there and you say, okay, attendance, I can do that. The exams, I can do that. But participation, I don't know if I want to answer questions or show people that I know this or know that. But here's the problem with that. You're sitting in this class and then the professor turns to you and says, now, what do you think about that, John? And my thought would be, think about what? Because I might not have been listening, see? How creative it would be if I could sit in that class and the professor calls on everybody else around me, behind me, in front of me, to the sides of me, and missed calling on me. Well, it happened that I had met this wise person, a yogi, a swami, and I had learned a few things from him. And I learned that you didn't have to do any magical stuff. You only had to create kind of a state of mind where you're almost invisible to everything or everybody. By that, I do not mean invisible from someone seeing you, but almost as good. They'll see you and not notice you're there. How many times have we actually done that when we look right at someone and we don't even notice the person? I know I've done it a lot of times, and I'm sure there are many others who had situations where they were not focused on anything and nobody noticed them.
I think that's happened many times. So you're saying when we use the cloak of invisibility, what we're doing is we're tapping into whatever it is that causes us not to be noticed.
Well, actually, what we're doing, basically that. But let me put it this way also. We are withdrawing into ourselves. We can observe and be very active in observing, but we're withdrawing into ourselves, so we're not speaking to ourselves. I may have mentioned in one of our talks that the longest conversation anyone ever has is the one that he or she starts with in the morning from when this person awakes to the night or nighttime when the person goes to bed. And even then we carry it into our dream time. We're always talking to ourselves. We're always busy. We're always jumping from one thing to the other thing. I know that happens with me. And if I don't watch it, I could be what you'd call a conglomeration of chaos in my thinking, because at one moment I'm thinking I've got to answer this email. The other moment I'm thinking, oh, I got to talk with Steve. The third moment I'm thinking I've got to talk with my brother, or I've got to call so-and-so, or I've got to do this, or I have to go here. You see how busy we get? Now, all these things are going around in our minds so quickly, and we're jumping from one to the other. When we do that, there are I don't want to call them waves, but that's what they probably are. Some kind of waves that go out of me, out of my head or my body or something, and it impacts on those around. Ever heard anybody say, look, I can do something that most people can't do, and they say, I'll stare at the back of that person's head and watch that person turn around. Well, this was a little game we played in college also. We'd be sitting there and we'd watch and stare, and all of a sudden the person for no reason turns around. We didn't touch that person, we didn't speak to that person, but he or she just turned around and looked and was puzzled as to why he turned around. This basically is the same thing in reverse, where you're there but you don't send any signals out. You don't, your mind becomes silent, and as it becomes silent and you have this desire within you not to be bothered by anybody or anything for that period of time, then nobody bothers you. In fact, it's a wonderful thing that works with animals also. And those of you who have dogs or cats, pets, would notice that you could use this. You could practice on that. The pet is there and wants to play and everything else, and you sit down and you just get make your mind very still. And the pet would look at you, the animal would look at you, and then turn around and probably go sleep. You aren't there anymore, but he is perfectly happy with that. So this is the type of noise I'm saying. And if you could learn to do it at will, you could do what I used to do in classes. Just sit there when they have an interactive class, when they wanted to ask us all these questions, and I didn't want to answer questions. Or maybe I may not have studied the thing the day before, and I didn't want to be embarrassed or be graded on that. And so I sit there, pray, but instead of praying, "Dear Lord, please don't let the professor call on me. Please, please, please call on all my friends, but don't call on me." Instead of doing that, which creates a kind of attention and makes it even more possible for the professor to call on you, you just breathe deeply and you quietly bring your mind to a still point. How do you do that? You think about a scene, an area, a time when you were quiet. Water is very good for this. Think of sitting by the ocean, and you're just watching the waves, and then your mind starts calming itself. Or think about sitting by a river and just watch the water just flow silently by. A leaf drops into it and your mind becomes so quiet. Actually, if you're in a class with a professor and other students, they will disappear totally from your thoughts, and before you know it, the class is over and nobody called on you. I suggest that some people should try that, or a lot of people should try it. It's good in many ways. It prevents anxiety, it's a way of healing, and it's a way of changing focus.
I think that's very powerful. I guess we should be careful that we don't overuse it to the point of the teacher not realizing that we were even in the class, not giving us any credit for even showing up. I think that could potentially be very, very powerful. You know, John, I've had, as you talk about this, I realize that I've had experiences where I have met people, mostly this is going a few years back, but I've met people, and then I remember meeting them again, and I remembered them, but they didn't remember me. And I was thinking there must have been something very insignificant about the initial meeting. There must have been some way that I was kind of cloaking myself, that I wasn't really standing out, and that I wasn't really making any kind of impression, because they, for whatever reason, didn't remember me, and they thought the second meeting was the first meeting, and I remembered them and their name and so forth, so they had made an impression on me, but the opposite hadn't happened. Does that tie into this cloak of invisibility?
It does, it does, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you weren't important to them at all. It meant you might have been in a space where you were quiet and they were very busy with thoughts running all through their heads all the time, and they could have stared at you and not seen you. I mean, we do that. Think of it. All these things we're talking about, they're so ordinary, precisely because they're extraordinary. They're part of our toolbox, if you will. And what would occur in cases like that, and it happens so often, in the early days, when I refer to that, I'm talking about a long time ago, even before kids. So my wife and I would be invited to parties, and she knew I would do one of two things at parties. I'd either meet everybody, talk very nicely, have a great time, or I would sit quietly and not want to be bothered. It depended on what was going on in my life at that time, whether I was thinking, oh my goodness, I gotta fly across the country tomorrow, or across the oceans or something. Oh, I've got to catch up on this. So in those cases, I just wanted to sit and not be bothered by a little chit-chat and talk about things that weren't very important. But being neighbors or friends, you don't want to be rude either. So my wife would say to me, when she noticed I was getting into that mode, "John, when we get there, please don't sit in the chair at the corner. Talk to people, okay? Talk to people." And it was like, she was only 5'2", but when she talked like that, I took notice, because okay, don't worry about it, I'll talk to people. But there were times, even in the middle of a party, I'll just go sit in a chair and people will come up, pass by me, go around me. I was there physically, but they wouldn't bother me. It was because I removed my mind and any signals I was sending to people around that I was there. See, this is what happened with that person who swore it was the first time he or she saw you. Because although you may have wanted to be noticed or wanted to talk or say a number of things to this person. That person was too busy in the mind. So it was very easy. You didn't even have to do anything. Person did it himself, distracted himself totally.
Okay, so that explains, that definitely explains that. So there could have been a number of things going on, but at any rate, it sounds like I was tapped into this concept that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we all are, Steve. We all are tapped into this. The thing we've got to do, and I keep repeating it from the first day we started talking, I kept repeating, we've got to practice it. Now, here's the problem with that. I didn't realize why people didn't want to practice something like this. But as told by a number of people over the years, you know, if I start doing that and it doesn't work, I'd be so disappointed and I'd start thinking that I can't do this. And I'd give up. And that's one of the reasons people don't practice this. They're afraid that they're going to fail. But the only way for you to get it is like the way to ride a bicycle. The first time you try, you may not get it right. But if you never try again, you'll never get it. You've got to keep practicing, like with swimming, with riding bicycles, with working on the internet, with speaking in front of crowds or groups or doing anything. It takes a little practice. But don't practice everything at once, because you'll lose track of where you are. If you're going to practice this one thing, the cloak of invisibility, start first by not taking it too seriously. Let me explain why, because that sounds like a contradiction. If you take it too seriously, you will become totally attached to outcomes, which means if it doesn't start working and if it doesn't work quickly, you will be disappointed and you'd give up and you'd say, you see, I knew it wasn't going to work, what that guy John was talking about. I don't know where he got that from, but this definitely doesn't work. I tried it and it didn't work. I tried it 3 times or 12 times and it didn't work. No, what has happened there is you got so attached to results and outcomes that you were focused on those instead of being focused on being quiet and withdrawing into yourself and breathing deeply and just sitting still and observing, not putting out any energy. And it's a two-way thing. It could be done. Again, the noise in us is what causes attention to be drawn to us. However, if we have, it's like a shotgun thing all around. Shots are going out, touching this person, that person, shots of energy, that is, and saying, hey, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, look at me. Because we need to relate to people and places and things. And it's like we send a signal out, just like animals are able to pick a person out by scent. You know, dogs, those who have owned or who own, or not own is the way, but who have pets, who have dogs, know that the dog could smell and trace you wherever you are. So we need also to leave a trail so that others could find us. We all have a unique frequency. I don't think two frequencies are ever the same, at least on Earth or maybe anywhere else. We have different, slightly different frequencies, and we can recognize each other. For example, you've heard of VoicePrint. No two voices seem to be alike. There are subtle differences, like fingerprints. And so we have our own identity, and when we put that cloak of invisibility around us, we prevent things or people from noticing us. We prevent ourselves from really, and I'm going a little slowly here because we're dealing with a very simple but at the same time extremely complex idea that many people will look at and laugh. But if they give it a chance the first time, they will see and say, yeah, there is something to that. And it's very useful. It's almost as useful, and one of these days we'll talk about like vaporizing clouds. You know, like, what's the big deal with that? Who wants to do that? But it's just practice for other things. And so I think this is how it works. And I find it very, very, a very good thing to do when you need some space. Or here's a funny one, and this works. This is always beautiful. Let's say you're with a whole bunch of people, and there's somebody you really don't want to meet, at least not today, because you know it'll be half an hour before he lets you go. He'll be telling you about all that happened in his life, and although you're a good friend and you're sympathetic, you just rushed over to the supermarket, to the grocery, to pick up one thing. You didn't, and you're in a hurry to get back home, and then you've got to make a call, but you know this is going to be a half an hour thing. So you go into the grocery store, and there he is. We'll call him Jim. And there's Jim, and he's on the other side, and you say, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I can't run out of here. Everybody would think I'm shoplifting. I can't, I can't hide from him. People will wonder what I'm doing. I can't leave because I came here for something. So what you do is just you withdraw within yourself very, very quickly. You start getting to the center of who you are. You don't even keep him in your thoughts. And if you do think of him, just see him walking over to the other aisle. This is a simple exercise. I would say if anybody tries it, they will find within a short while, within a very short while, maybe 4, 5, 10 tries, they're able to do it. And then another little bit of trying, and they can do it automatically at will.
I think that's wonderful, John. You know, we've got a lot of questions. I hope we have time for a few questions. Would that be all right?
That'll be great. Love to.
Okay, questions were pouring in about this topic because people are very interested in it. First of all, I've got a question from Cheryl in Kent, England, and she asks an interesting question, which is, if you're being pulled over by the police... So apparently, in her scenario, she's already been caught by them for speeding or whatever. If you're being pulled over by the police, can you go invisible so they will forget about you and not write you a ticket?
I have never tried that one. But you see, I think by that time it's a little too late.
Sounds like it.
I'm sorry, Cheryl. I think the time to do that, if you know you're speeding, is to keep that cloak of invisibility on and think, you know, that any of the radar systems will just bounce off. The radar beam will just bounce off here without knowing. They won't be able to read it. And just keep driving and nothing will happen. You know, we shouldn't be driving over speed, but we all do that. And there are those times for one little simple infraction, they'll waste their time, give you a ticket. So the time for doing that was passed. When he pulled you over, you were noticed already. You can't be unnoticed. Then you start using other tools. The cloak of invisibility is not going to prevent him from giving you a ticket, but there are other tools. The tool of what I call innocence. Now everybody's saying,
what is that? Trouble.
Yeah, what is that tool? First of all, you'd be nervous, but you just look at him as, I'm sorry, officer, I really am. And you think calmly to yourself. Because again, you don't want, the minute you send out signals of how scared you are, or the minute you show you're aggressive, for example, you do not say things like, well, why did you stop me? For goodness sakes, you know exactly why you were stopped. So don't do that. Just say, hi, officer, I am so sorry, I must have... And you know what would happen? 9 times out of 10, he will say, okay, don't do that again.
I think that's great advice. And for Cheryl, you know, I think a really good idea would be not to break the law in the first place. Might be a good plan of action. Just a future note for Cheryl. But I do appreciate the levity she brought to the situation, the humor, and that's a wonderful question. So thank you, Cheryl. Let's move on. Vonnie, he doesn't say where he's from, but Vonnie asks, can I walk through walls with this? Interesting question. My understanding that is that maybe he's presupposing that by using the cloak of invisibility, you're actually scattering your molecules somehow, and it's having some physical effect. So is there a physical effect, and can you use it for such things as walking through walls?
You could walk through walls, but not using this method.
Okay.
And there's another method, and some of us, again, I remember... Richard Bach, I keep mentioning him because I learned a lot from this guy, and just love the things that he and I learned from each other. And he mentioned that from the day, we are just actually hypnotized about walls now. Some people would want my head for this, but I never cared about that anyway. I'll explain. I'll tell you what happened. We actually could walk through walls, but why don't we? Because from the moment we were born, this is what Bach and I had this talk about. He says, from the moment you were born, you see mommy and daddy, as they're leaving the room, they open the door. They never walk through the walls. So at a very early age, we are hypnotized into believing that we can't walk through walls. And that is such a strong belief that hardly anybody does, except, again, yogis or advanced masters. Now, why can we walk through, can't we walk through walls? After all, walls are very porous. I can hear everybody saying, what? Well, again, this is a science bar to me. And let me explain. Walls are made out of things called atoms. Atoms are made out of things called electrons and protons and neutrons. And those things are made out of other things. And other things are made out of other things. All the way down. And these things are so, and I use the word things loosely, of course. These things are so minute that in an atom, let's take an oxygen atom or a hydrogen atom, hydrogen being one of the most abundant element in the known universe, the distance between the electron that's going around it, the hydrogen only has one, by the way, the distance between it and the nucleus of that atom is almost like the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Seems like there's a lot of empty space in between. So think of a molecule of water which consists of two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom called H2O. I think everybody would remember that from their first days in studying a little bit of chemistry. And here are these things together with giant spaces. If you were to be able to put the water molecule under the strongest microscope ever invented, it hasn't been invented yet, but a million times better than that, you will notice the giant spaces. Ergo, thus, I'm sitting on a chair, which right now, as I'm talking to you, Steve, this chair, I know, is made up of matter. Matter which is made up of atoms. Atoms made up of electrons and all the other things that go with it, with giant spaces in between, which means, theoretically, I'm sitting on nothing. The space between these particles are so large in comparison to the particles themselves, the mass of the particles themselves, that it's like nothing, and yet I do not fall to the floor or fall through the floor. Why? Because when we came here to this, let's call it schoolhouse Earth, or to this planet, we had to agree on certain rules. One of the rules was we were going to follow the nomenclature and the systems of this Earth or of this planet. Maybe there are others where people just disappear, walk through walls and so forth. But we agreed to that because if we didn't agree to that, we wouldn't have been permitted to come here. So we said we're going to obey the rules, and here we are, and we don't walk through walls. But theoretically we can. Now let me tell you another time when we can walk through walls. Do you know, I had said before that reality is different in different states of consciousness. And when I'm awake, I'm in the state of waking consciousness. When I'm dreaming, I'm in the state of dreaming consciousness. And in dreams, all of us, or most of us, can walk through walls, fly through the air, leap tall buildings, peer at one part of the world in an instant, travel at the speed of light or faster. You see? Different state of consciousness. So our true nature is to do these things. But here we have been hypnotized into believing that we must obey these laws that we're supposed to obey here on Earth. And just as an aside to that, we can break the rules if we want to. But before you break them, know what they are and know how to use the other ones. And remember, the contract, I'm just being so mathematical here or so legal. I think we signed a contract which said at the bottom, subject to change for any reason, at any time, without any penalty.
John, that's fascinating. That gives us the leeway that we need to be able to make the changes in our lives. And that gives us a lot of hope. And that's really what this is all about. And I'm looking forward to learning more from you as we continue talking about the Cloak of Invisibility and the Power of Silence.